morning and welcome to Real Estate Talk. I'm your host, Marian Johnfin, the real estate lady, the best source for all your real estate needs. And indeed, this is my intention to get the information for you so that when you're making decision, it is informed decision. Sometimes it can be difficult to get the experts, but I'm trying. So this morning, I'm privileged to have with me Mr. Darius Jones. He's always willing and able to come and share his knowledge, what he knows with us, and I really do appreciate that. And this morning we'll be discussing the anatomy of the certificate of title. What does it mean? What does it mean having a certificate of title? Joint tenancy and tenant in common. What does it say? Legal representative. What does it say? When you have a title and all that is written upon it, where are we in terms of advancing our system, in terms of registering our property? And so Mr. Jones is here to discuss that with us. And you will be free, of course, to ask your question to him in any other matter. So this is what we're discussing this morning, the anatomy of the certificate of title. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Real Estate Talk with host Marian Johnfin, the real estate lady, the best source for all your real estate needs. Real Estate Talk is aired on the big station, Q95 FM, every Tuesday morning from 10:15 a.m. to 10:45 a.m. Real Estate Talk is talking primarily on all things real estate, commercial and residential. We talk about the real estate market. We talk about the market conditions for buying and selling. We talk about choosing a professional real estate agent. We talk about financing your purchase and finding the right property. We engage the experts with specific roles in the process of buying and selling real estate. Real Estate Talk every Tuesday on Q95 FM from 10:15 a.m. with host Marian Johnfin.
And welcome back. Thank you so much for listening and allowing me to come into your homes, your office, wherever you are. And I really appreciate that. Mr. Jones, again, thank you so much for joining me on Real Estate Talk.
You're most welcome. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so the anatomy of a certificate of title. First of all, what is the benefit or are there benefits of having a certificate of title? What does that mean?
Well, it is very beneficial to have a certificate of title because, in effect, it is the best proof of ownership. Mm-hmm. And if you hold a certificate of title, you don't need much to show that you are the owner of this piece of property. And you mentioned earlier the anatomy of the certificate of title. One of the most important things, it says who owns that piece of property. It says where it is, mm-hmm. How much land is encompassed in this certificate of title.
Right.
It also tells you who are your neighbors, your mm-hmm. adjacent occupiers, mm-hmm. and the date when this title was issued to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I have an example here of a certificate of title. It was registered in 1970. Now, it says state number 4. It's a V4. Colony of Dominica. What does that title says, Colony of Dominica?
Well, whenever you see that sort of citation, it tells you this is an old certificate of title. Dominica was once a colony, mm-hmm. and from colony we moved to associated statehood, mm-hmm. Through to independence. Mm-hmm. If you were to have a modern certificate of title now, it would not say any of this, say colony of Dominica.
This says the era at which Dominica is politically?
It would give you an indication where we were at that time. Mm-hmm. So once you see colony, mm-hmm. you know it's somewhere,
in the time of
while Dominica was
slavery.
Yeah, but Donegal was still a colony.
A colony of England.
Yeah, that is correct.
And today you would see, would you see anything, let's say a colony, and say something about the West Indies?
Well, there are titles at a certain period you would see of the Windward Islands,
because Dominica
was part of, mm-hmm. I mean, it's still part of the Windward Islands, but in a different...
Because of the structure.
Set up, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so for today, if I were to get a new title, it would say Commonwealth of Dominica.
That is correct.
And that says something, because now we are independent, and part
yes.
of the Commonwealth.
We've moved
so it
on,
tells
yes.
you, I'm looking at history, it tells you the era at which Dominica
is. That is correct.
It's a large page, and so it is broken into. So on the, I would say on the, my left side, it gives you a number. Let's say 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yes.
And then the year.
That is
so
correct.
What does that say?
Well, in order to get a certificate of title, you would have had to make an application
mm-hmm.
to the registrar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the application would be given a number.
Mm-hmm.
And hence the number you see at the top of the...
Mm-hmm.
On the top right hand corner, say mm-hmm. application so and so of a particular year. In mm-hmm. this particular case, it was of 1970.
Yes. Yeah. So it will tell you the time that it was and the number. Would it be number based on the amount of applications they've received for the year?
Well, it would run in this
chronological
yes.
order. Yeah. Okay, and then the time. That it was
entered. Yeah, because they have separate books
mm.
when they enter it into
mm-hmm.
some book, and the exact time when it is entered.
Entered the exact time and the
yes.
date.
Yeah.
Let's say that one was done on 21st July,
that is
1970.
Yes.
Okay, here we see land title, registered book, and it gives a number. Explain this to me.
Right. Well, the register, it is really exactly what it says.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is formatted in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
So every year, you would have a number of titles that would possibly fool one mm. book or mm-hmm. two books or whatever.
So it's basically for the registration system at the registry.
At the registry.
So when you come with this number, I5 or whatever it
right.
is, folio number 6200, they go into that.
They would know.
It's their
yes.
system, style of
correct.
System
yes.
for registering the title.
Registering the title. And also, if you come to do a search
mm-hmm.
and you were to give the number, let's use an abstract number.
Yeah, yeah.
Book R
mm-hmm.
10.
Book R 10 and
yes,
folio 5.
Folio, so mm-hmm. They would go and look for that
as
book.
As it's easier for them to
and
get.
In that book, they mm-hmm. would look for the folio. You know, so it's
a sub file.
That is correct. So
okay.
to make searching a bit easier.
Okay. Now, with this wording, know all men to whom this present shall come that. Mary and John Finn example, the
yes.
name. So, this is all English.
Very old English. And as you see, we still maintain a lot of the things that the British have done away with. The certificate of title, let's say, like the modern British
mm-hmm.
certificate of title, doesn't have all
the
this
all
extras.
It don't?
No. It's in plain English.
Mm.
So if you read this one here, be it...
it does be it. It said, know all men to whom these presents shall come. What does that say?
Yes,
sir. So let's say a child who, you know, like this young man here, who don't know this kind of funky kind of language.
Yes, well,
what does that say? He would understand that.
This language is really old English.
But do we still apply today? You still get a certificate with that?
Well, even the new certificate of title, it has certain extracts of this old English, but we've moved along. Not as
are
far
we moving fast
English,
enough?
No. Not as fast as the English has moved.
Okay, so we might have to stay on this point a little bit. In the be it known, know all men to whom this present shall come, that, let's say, I'm using my name, Mary Ann John Finn,
yeah.
is a registered proprietor, and then it gives this.
Yeah.
Now, in a simple matter, if I alone, and my name is on the certificate of title, that's a simple matter. But if you and I are married, you sometimes see that there are tenants in common,
yeah.
joint tenants, legal representative. But I want to stay with the tenants in common and joint tenancy.
Okay.
Explain to me, you and I, we are married or we are buying a piece of property. We may not be, but we have a piece of property and we are registering it. What is the best? Can you first explain what is joint tenancy and tenancy in common? Tenants in common.
Yeah. Yes. If you may allow, we just to go back to this, to use a shortened version of this, I guess this must have been a typo there. But the effect of it is to say, to all
let it
persons,
be known.
Let it be known.
That Marian Johnfield owns this property.
Yes.
And then you and I having a property, we are buying a property, or a young person, your young couple looking to buy a property. They are married or intended to marry. Explain to them tenants in common and joint tenancy.
Okay. There is no single feature that really you could say is best. It depends on individual circumstances. You have to know the effect of joint tenancy and tenancy in common.
Okay.
And the effect really is, if you have a certificate of title in respect of land owned by two people as joint tenants, when they're going to do transactions, they would need two signatures.
Two signatures. So, do me a favor. I want you to explain, so somebody who's listening would want to know, what is joint tenancy?
Yeah, that's what we're coming to.
Okay.
So that one of the greater effect or the big effect in joint tenancy is that if or when one joint tenant, one of them, passes away, the surviving proprietor becomes the sole owner of that property.
So you don't need to go to court, you don't need to ask the court to give you permission to be the owner of the property. It automatically becomes yours.
It devolves onto that person.
Okay.
And that person can do certain transactions.
But while the person is alive, while both of us are alive, any transaction relating to that property must be
done by
both of us.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
You would need two signatures.
So joint tenancy meaning once that person, the other partner dies, the surviving partner totally owns that property.
Yes, they become the sole owner.
And
it is unknown in order, the right of survivorship.
Say that again?
The right of survivorship.
Okay. Tenants in common.
In tenants in common, two people may own the same property.
Marianne and Jones.
Right.
Okay.
May own as tenant in common.
Tenant in common.
And although, take for instance, if it's the house where there is no identifiable way to divide it, you cannot say, well, you have half and I have half. Although two people can live in one house. But the effect of tenant in common is that when one of the tenants passes
on, owners, yes,
when they after they're deceased,
yes,
their rights are not extinguished or assimilated by the other person, by the surviving.
So you and I have a property, and if one of us died, we are joint tenants.
Yes, we are tenants in common.
I don't want to mix it. Tenants in common.
Yes.
You and I have a property, tenants in common. One of us died.
Right.
It does not mean that the surviving partner inherits the entire property.
They do not.
It means that
not automatically, no.
Not automatically. It means that your estate.
So that would be like two
individual
notional shares.
Yeah,
two notional shares.
Mm-hmm.
And where it is land, it is much easier to deal with. Because with land, and you have, say, 5 acres.
5 acres, yes.
You can decide, okay, let us divide it.
And,
you have yours, I have mine. But where it's, take for instance, a bungalow, a two-bedroom house.
Right.
Something that makes division difficult. You have other ways of dealing. One person might buy out the other person, etc. But your right does not
end
at death.
At death. If you were to register, I'm coming to you, and me and this young man is married, and I come to you and I said, I'm going to buy this property, and what would be your advice as to the best way, joint tenants or tenants in common?
Well, most times you leave it to the client to make the decision.
But I don't know.
So you tell the client exactly that you all are buying a piece of property now, and you need to remember, if God forbid, one of you go early at an early stage or at some point.
Mm-hmm.
If you use joint tenancy, it means that your husband or the one who survives it would, in fact,
mm-hmm.
be the sole owner of that property.
Mm-hmm.
If you use tenant in common with husband and wife, although if you had tenant in common, the wife might then be the personal representative of the deceased husband, and she would might be able
to administer his estate.
To administer it, but even that has certain.
Yeah, you need to go to the court for that, or you should apply to the court.
That is correct.
For that that authority, in Dominica, what are the most common way of registering persons with two persons on a title?
And then again, it depends on the age of the people. You find if you have a young couple,
right,
and they're starting a family,
right.
Very often it would be joint tenancy.
Joint tenancy.
Yes, very often. These are people, young people, who would be pulling their resources together. You might have a mortgage coming up at some point. They would have to make all these arrangements. They would have...
Joint tenants is the one if you die.
Yes.
You own
yes,
everything.
Yes.
The tenants in common, if you die, you still owe me my share.
So take, for instance, if your father was living property for you and your two brothers,
right.
You would certainly prefer it to be tenant in common if you wanted to get your piece out of it.
Right.
Whereas if it is joint, you have to sit and wait.
Mm.
And while you're waiting, you might be the first one to go. So your shares would be extinguished if it were joint tenancy. Whereas if it is a tenant in common, your children could inherit it.
So what happens if you have a joint tenancy and you divorce?
Well, one of the things that you can in law do is to what they call sever, break up the joint tenancy. So if, take for instance, you all were husband and wife or business partners or, you know, you're involved in a relationship with someone and you buy property as joint tenants, and later on things don't work.
Okay.
You can definitely sever, break up a joint tenancy and convert it to tenancy in common.
Mm-hmm. But then, of course, there's a process.
There's a process.
And you have to go through the lawyer, through this, the judge or the registrar.
Yeah, there is a process that you would have to go. Yes, certainly.
Okay. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I am opening the line. If you want to ask Mr. Jones any question, feel free to do so. So this is Real Estate Talk.
When last have you been to L.A. Jupini Hardware? That long? Well then, come in to see what's new in stock. Kitchenware, pots, pans, plumbing and bathroom accessories, small appliances, garden tools, a full range of cutlasses, and so much more. Take advantage of our layaway option. Set up a gift registry for that special occasion, or pick up that much-needed item for your home or garden. Come home to quality at our convenient location on Long Lane in Roseau. LHOP Hardware.
Come home to quality. Swing by for quality.
There are two letters of the alphabet that are very important when it comes to building materials, the E and the H. E-H, you know what I mean? E-H Charleston Company, standing tall and above, from the A to the Z of building and all the letters in between. C for cement, D for doors, G for galvanized, R for roof, W for windows, N for nails, L for locks, P for plywood, and for paint, and you can go on and on. If only Maria knew, she would delete the E-H from the very alphabet itself, because E-H Charleston's ready to build back all what she destroyed. Builders who know better than I do, tout ce tibet yaki necessaire to build back better and stronger. Yo couché la côté E.H. Charles. E.H. Charles and Company, vle encourage you. Dream big. Power spare pour les cochons commencer by to build yours.
And welcome back. We are here with Mr. Darius Jones. He's an officer of the court, an attorney at law, and he is discussing with me the anatomy of the certificate of title. And before, we were speaking about joint tenancy and tenants in common, and sometimes you also see that, for example, John Steady John Finn with Marian Johnfin as personal representative. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, where the proprietor, the registered proprietor,
the owner,
mm-hmm. has died. Mm-hmm. If he had a will, mm-hmm. he would have had an executor. Mm-hmm. If he had no will, then letters of administration would have been taken, and you would have an administrator, mm-hmm. somebody who would administer his estate. Mm-hmm. At their time, and these people, the administrator and the executor, the personal
representative
would refer to that class of persons.
So when that is when you see that on a title, it means the person has authority to administer the affair of that property on behalf of the deceased.
So it indicates that the deceased had a portion of land, mm-hmm. and now his administrator mm-hmm. or would be dealing with that portion of land.
But that don't mean that that personal representative or the administrator or executor owns that property.
No. Far from that, because sometimes the person who is the executor or may not have any personal interest mm-hmm. in that property. His job really is to administer the estate of the deceased. Mm-hmm. In some cases, let's say most cases where you have letters of administration, is going to be a close
family member.
Yes, like
A daughter or son.
Yes, and then the law actually gives you an order in which those. Mm-hmm. Those persons, can apply.
Okay, let's take a call. Good morning and welcome to Real Estate Talk. Hello, good morning. We lost them. Hello, good morning. Welcome to Real Estate Talk. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Please call again. So again, the personal representative does not own the property.
No, not necessarily. I mean, there are times the person can appoint his wife or his son, mm-hmm. and that person could have an interest in the property, but it's not mm-hmm. necessarily so.
Mm-hmm. Unregistered on the certificate of title, you see a lot of writing. Caveat, if a piece is hatched out, you could see in here, in this one that I have here, that a piece of land was hatched out on a certain date to a certain person and a certain amount. Why is that important to always have all of these things on the?
Well, one thing it shows you clearly, just looking at it, it tells that there have been certain dealings with the land, and more particularly that certain portions have actually been hatched off, mm-hmm. either by way of sale mm-hmm. or by
gifting.
Just, you know, there are different ways that the property may need to be hatched off mm-hmm, mm-hmm, for different reasons. Mm-hmm. There are times you might have a court a matter which went to court, and court might order that this person be given 1.5 acres of land, okay. and so the executor would take the necessary steps to have this person mm-hmm. Receive their 1.5 acres of land.
And also when there's a mortgage.
The people who lend money would always want to make sure that they're protected. Mm-hmm. And nowadays it's more by way of caveat. Mm-hmm. So the credit union.
The banks,
mm-hmm. they would put mm-hmm. a caveat saying that before
we have interest in that property, it cannot be sold or anything be done to dealt with. That's what a caveat is.
Well, it's even wider than that. You know, they forbid any dealings from being registered on that title. Mm-hmm. And one of the effects of it is that once it is registered there, mm-hmm. anybody who go and deal with that property, mm-hmm. they do so at their peril. So if a person goes to the credit union mm-hmm. and takes a loan, there is a caveat against the property.
Okay, let's take a call. Good morning and welcome to Real Estate Talk.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, sir.
I want to ask a question there.
Go ahead.
Like, if you have your title of your land and you, after now, you get the, you have your title of your land, somebody came and they put a fence in your land. What you can do about that?
Thank you so much. I'll have Mr. Jones. That's a legal matter.
Yeah, that is correct, yes. When you have your certificate of title, on your certificate of title, there are certain boundary points mm-hmm. on a plan that is attached to your certificate of title.
Mm-hmm.
And it tells you how much land that you have so that your boundaries should be identifiable. And if mm-hmm. a person comes and they put a fence, that is a form of trespass.
Mm-hmm.
And you can put the person, you can make the person, you can go to the law mm-hmm. for redress on that.
Okay.
What you could also do mm-hmm. is ask for a surveyor to reconstruct your boundary, just to make sure
right.
that where you see is your boundary, that is where it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in that case, it's either if you are sure and you can identify your points, your boundary points, then you go to the law. If not, one of the easier way, a simpler way, is go to engage the service of a surveyor and have him just reconstruct your boundary points for you. We have another call. Good morning and welcome to Real Estate Talk.
Yes. If on a will, it was stated.
I said, can you speak a little louder, please, sir?
Yes, on a will.
On a will.
Yeah, it will be stated that X, Y, Z is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And some days a term, any other thing there with, what does that mean?
Can you understand
yeah.
that?
Okay. Well, usually when a will is drafted, there might be specific
mm-hmm.
items or bequests. Mm-hmm. Let's say like my land in Granby to this, mm-hmm. my vehicle to that person.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is usually a clause in law, it's called the residue or any other thing that I may own or I
that I'm not aware of or I forgot.
Yes, or may come to me
mm-hmm. okay.
you know, at the time of my death. It could go to X. So that is what they call a residue clause. And it can be so many different things. It can be land, it can be money.
Money.
It can be gold.
Yes.
You know, somebody else could have made a will and left it for you and you didn't even know.
You were, okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Our system, registering of properties in Dominica, is our system outdated or is there needs for... Because the reason I'm saying that, when submitting documents to the registrar, I was amazed that you come to the registrar and there's a book. When I came, it was outside in the reception area and you write down, three of these, two of these, whatever you bring down, and you leave it here, boom, and Darius Jones came and he come in the same book and your document is there and Darius Jones come and he write down the same thing and everybody come. At the end of the day, I think the registrar takes it in and the staff, you know. Does that concern you?
Well, what really concerns me is the sheer amount of paper in age of technology, the mm-hmm. sheer amount of paper that we use in all these transactions.
Mm-hmm.
And recently there were moves at the registry to update the process. And now you have the digital, digitally produced certificate of title.
Mm-hmm.
It has a different format. I also can see that in the last couple of years, there was this system where you, after you presented your title, you would get a letter or you get
a
note.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, almost, well, you can call it a receipt.
Right.
It really acts as a receipt, yes.
Mm-hmm.
From the registrar telling mm-hmm. you that on a certain date, mm-hmm. you presented this, they give mm-hmm. you a list of what you presented.
Right.
And I think that was a very, very good step forward for the simple reason that titles don't get processed and
easily,
quickly.
Right, so it can be lost.
Or sometimes the person want to know where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Or
follow up.
Yes.
Yeah, good morning, Ms. Johnson.
Yes, good morning, sir.
Mr. Jones.
Yes, sir.
Is there a difference between the executor of a will and the administrator?
Executor, administrator, is there a difference? Thank
well,
you, sir.
I
have a follow-up question. Eh?
What okay. is it?
The executor is a person named in the will.
Mm-hmm. And the administrator?
And, the administrator is someone who they would have to make an application to.
The court appoints?
Yes, that is correct. Whereas,
okay.
whereas the executor is the one named
so
in the
I
will.
Name my executor. I want
yes.
Darius Jones to take care of my thing. But if I have no will, then the court appoints, somebody applies, and the court
that is correct.
Approve you.
Yeah. Also, mm-hmm. even where you may have a will.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I have a follow-up question today.
Yeah, tell me.
Yeah, let us suppose someone is the executor of a will, and then he claims he incurred certain expenses after the death of the owner of the property. What is the procedure if he recurring his expenses?
Okay,
recovering
so
his expenses.
He's recovering expenses. So,
yes.
Thank
well,
you, sir.
Yeah. Well, the executor is always entitled to recoup expenses that he had in administering
the
affairs of
that
the
estate.
Mm-hmm. So take, for instance...
But it must be proven.
Well, I mean...
He has to prove that.
So if he had a surveyor...
Right.
And
a lawyer's fee.
Yeah, a lawyer's fee.
Mm-hmm.
If, take for instance, he had a situation where people had encroached,
and he had to regulate that.
Anything that is done in his duty as executor, he can get that.
So an executor must register everything, or have a book or whatever, a receipt of every expense that he made. He cannot just off the top of his head say, well.
You see, when someone takes the role of executor, you're taking on very, very serious business.
Okay, okay.
And you have to deal with it very, very seriously. So if you pay a surveyor to do something, you would expect the person to have a receipt. If, take for instance, you had to do something in an emergency, so take a simple example, like if you had the land on a slope and you had to get some boulder that was hanging in a very precarious position out because you believe it might damage the property below.
Right.
Anything that you do, if you had to get rid of squatters who came in into the estate, you would, of necessity, get a receipt from whoever you've paid, and you can.
So yes, in bottom line, yes, the executor can recover any expense that he's made.
But it must be expense in the course of administering
the estate.
It can't be his personal business.
Mm.
And another thing is that the executor does not always have to be paid. Not because you are executor, you can say, I'm taking that for my time.
Oh.
It doesn't always happen like that.
Oh, so he cannot, because he has to agree to with the owner, or maybe the owner, he had a discussion and he agrees to take on that role. It's like almost a volunteer position.
Yes, yes. You know, many times you give that, you entrust that duty to your good friend. You know?
Okay. We don't have much time, we already passed the time, but I still want to ask that question, and I would like you to, you know, if you can quickly. The replacement, Maria, have damaged lots of documents, and certificate of title is one of them. In replacing of a certificate of title, why is it that the person has to go through the entire process again, engage surveyor, engage appraisal or valuer? Why is this has to, when the court already has a document, they're saying all of that?
Yeah. Well, we did in fact indicate that certain things that the British did in the 1800s, 1900s, we in Dunker still do that today.
Exactly.
Just to answer that question, it might be good to look at the situation in England, where when a person registers property, they don't give him a duplicate that in the same way they do here.
Right.
But you could always get a certified copy based on the one that they have
at
the registry.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use that for all purposes.
So you don't get a duplicate in England?
No. Okay. But you could get a certified
copy
of what they have.
Right.
And to get a certificate of title in Dominica after yours has been lost, you have to get new plans, new valuation, and the valuation.
You have to, it is the lawyer again.
Based on that, you have to pay fees, government fees of 2% of the value of the property.
Mm-hmm. And the value may increase compared to the time.
Yes, it most likely will. And it has to be advertised.
And so you have to go through the whole process from that's the first time.
Very, very close to the going over the whole thing.
And do you think that this is we should look into that as a country and see if how best we can make it easier for all of us?
Well, I think if the registry has their copy and that is intact, I believe they should be able to reconstruct the title from what you have in registry. Although, well, the government will lose on their 2% of the value of the
property. I believe that you should be able to pay for something. I should believe that.
Oh, yes, you should pay to reconstruct.
Something, yeah.
But then the lawyers would also lose their... The surveyor would still need new plans. You'd still need new plans and...
But we need to look at that, the way that we are doing that, because it's become too outdated and we need to make things easier for all of us. Would you agree?
Yes. And, I mean, we didn't bring Maria on ourselves. It came, but a lot of people lost certificate of titles and things because it got all wet. And you now have to reconstruct, and it's
sorry.
It's cost.
Because if your property, which costs 60,000, you build 60,000 when you first do it, you build and you have a house on it and it's 600,000,
right.
You now have to pay.
Well, you
the
can
2% is $12,000.
Right.
That's and for the government only. You don't have
the lawyer wants 3%.
The lawyer is 3% and the surveyor by right is 1%.
It costs a lot.
It costs a lot. So we really need to look at that.
This is something that we should as a country look at. Although, a lot of people might say, oh, you're cutting me out,
But that's okay. But it has to be done because we cannot all be suffering. Anyway, Mr. Jones, I really appreciate your time with me and I hope that all of us learn something.
Thank you so much.
And until next time, this has been Real Estate Talk, Marianne John Finn. God bless.